Good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I know today is going to be an extra special show. We've been cracking jokes, we've been talking, we've been laughing backstage. So I already know you are going to enjoy today's guest. So you know what that means. I need you to go wake a friend. That's right. They sleep, they trying to sleep in, they resting, enjoying their day. We don't care anything about that. We need you to go text them, tweet them, inbox them, whatever you have to do, call them, shake them, send a carrier pigeon, because today's show, your friend does not want to miss, and friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're going ahead and sharing the show, I'm going to introduce our first guest, Mr. Sean Giovanni. He is a sonic storyteller. He is passionate about helping artists achieve their unique creative visions. Good morning, Sean. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fantastic. I'm excited to talk to everybody today.
I'm excited to have you. So tell me, what does your shirt say?
My shirt says, "Everybody wants to be famous, but nobody wants to do the work." And it's a quote from Kevin Hart, and I got it at one of his shows a couple of years ago. I saw that, and it was just something that I felt like I personally needed as a reminder every day to do the best work that I can, be able to move forward in my life and career.
I love it. I think those are definitely words to live by. I love me some Kevin Hart. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Sean, and what you do.
Well, as you said, I'm a sonic storyteller. What that attests to is a record producer and a person who collaborates with artists in a variety of different ways to help them tell their creative story, mainly through record production, but also through content creation, both with visual and graphics and marketing. My main passion is just creating great music that I can be passionate about that has a purpose behind it. And I'm fortunate enough to be able to make a living doing that and have a great company and great team of people that work with me to help support our artists in their vision.
That's wonderful. Now, over the past 3 to 4 months, have you seen a trend for more artists to focus on the digital aspect of what they're doing?
There's definitely been a uptrend in live streaming, which has been a thing that I've been very excited about because it's something that I dug into early on, and we've been expanding our live streaming capabilities at the studio to provide a really high-end, really high production value option for artists to be able to perform live in a position where a lot of their tours and shows and all the venues are shut down. So there's definitely been in that way. But for years, there's been a big shift in trend towards digital marketing being a great way that artists can engage with their fans and build their brand and their following.
Do you have any recommendations for any artist who is watching who says, you know what, I want more exposure. I want to build my brand. I want more fans. I want to get out there more. What are some, because everybody kind of says, oh, well, just get your Instagram account, right? So you get your Instagram account and you have one follower and that's your mom, and you really don't know how to get it out there. What are some suggestions and recommendations for the artist?
Well, there's a couple things. I think that initially artists go into this idea of I just need to tell people what I'm doing and ask them to participate. And I think that that goes for a lot of businesses too, where old school advertising was just this is what I have to offer. You should come and get it. And I think that things have really moved towards the idea of telling a story. And especially with creatives and being an artist, you have a very unique story to tell. And that story is what drives the creation of your music. And how you're going to be able to engage with people. So instead of saying, "Hey, go and listen to my new song," maybe tell a story about that song and how it came together, the process for creating it, the inspiration, the experience that went into giving you that inspiration, and all of those things are going to be a much higher level of engagement. The other thing that I see that happens a lot with artists and with business owners in general is that the idea that we have to have everything prepared and laid out before we take action. And I'm a big fan of do it now. I'm a very calculated person, and I definitely am a very analytical and want to go in with an idea and a structure behind things. But I think that a lot of times artists specifically put so much effort into kind of like perfecting things or feeling like I have to do this before I can do this, rather than just taking action at the thing that they know is going to bring value to building their business. So I work with a lot of artists on that. It's just dive in and start sharing what you're passionate about, and you'll find other people that will align with you. And then once you get over that hump, you know how to tell the story, and you've made the decision that I'm going to take action, then the biggest thing is just doing it consistently. I think with anything in building a brand and building a network, you just have to be doing it consistently. Every moment that you take a break from something, there's somebody else that's working harder and moving towards that and taking that opportunity away from you. So we just have to be able to continue to stay on top of it.
And when you say do it consistently, I know one of the questions that's asked, like maybe an artist, he releases their new song, their new video, they posted it. Now they don't know what else to say about it. It's like, okay, I've tweeted it once, or maybe I've tweeted it twice. I can't just post. How are some ways that you recommend as far as changing the conversation?
It's changing. That's a great point. And it's changing the way that you're looking at the messaging. So when we start telling a story where we stop thinking about just the very baseline tangible thing of, hey, go watch this video. If we tell a story about the video, we can start with the song. You can look at how many lyrics you have in the song, how many lines in the song there are. Each one of those lines came from a specific inspiration. So that you could take a whole song and separate it out into dozens of posts about different ways that this song inspired you and different experiences that will hopefully align with a universal group of people. You could make sure that while you're creating that video that you're also capturing behind the scenes content. We always have a secondary camera person that's just there to capture the experience, because I know how interesting that can be for people outside of the industry and fans to be able to see the process of how something came together. And now they can watch the video with a different level of understanding of the effort and passion and time that went into it. And they can see it from a different experience. So just capturing as much content as you can and then finding unique ways to continue to tell that story rather than just saying, well, I put it up and I shared it and I said, watch it. And that's all I can do now. We have to continue. And then it goes into continuing to create more content consistently. So the idea that if I just write this one really good song and make this one really good video, then I'm going to go viral or someone is going to discover me. And that's just not the case anymore in the modern music industry. There's a saturation. There's too much competition. The industry is just different. And opportunities, people are looking for a business and a brand that's already developed to invest into as opposed to develop. And so with that, we need to look at consistent content, putting things together, having a continuous stream of things to keep people engaged and interested.
Well, I have a question, actually.
Absolutely.
If I may. Sean, you talked a couple times about kind of process, you know, consistency. What is like one of your tips to kind of create consistently? Because sometimes you hear about creative people, they'll go like weeks or months without sort of creating anything new, and sort of it's a very slow process. What is your kind of approach to consistently creating new music or new content?
I have a pretty intense process for how I stay consistently inspired. And it starts with having a routine. I have a morning routine that's about 2 hours long that starts with gratitude, with exercise, with meditation, and with reading. And that puts my mind and my body in a place to just be open and ready to take on the day and take on adversity. So the things that might normally be a thing that would trigger taking away from my inspiration are now I have more control and ability to be able to take on those things that happen throughout the day, and I can stay more focused on it. The other thing was starting to create some structure, which is a thing that's a little bit of a challenge for creative people in looking at how to kind of structure their day and structure their life. And I created something that one of my friends and business partners coined as a prosperity plan. So as opposed to having a schedule, I have a plan for prosperity every week. And that consists of just my normal schedule of what I'm going to do on a day-to-day working with my clients, the sessions that I have, the meetings, appointments that I have. But I also have a list of short-term actionable items that will help me move towards my long-term goals. And I set those, at least a couple of them, at different break spots that I have each day throughout the week. And then I review my plan of action at the end of each day for the following day. And through doing that, I have found that level of structure has not taken away from my openness to creativity at all. It's only helped support it because I'm not worried about what comes next. My subconscious mind is already comfortable in that environment and knows what's coming next and knows what my priorities are. So my creativity can remain more open to experience and just being open to recognizing experiences as inspiration. So I don't get as overwhelmed I won't say that I never get overwhelmed, you know, as emotional and creative people, you know, we're always discovering and thinking in different ways. But I will say that I've definitely began to have more control and stay in a more inspired, you know, mind state.
I think that's wonderful advice. I think one of the key words that we mentioned was consistency. And people often believe or tend to believe that success happens overnight. But success, the beginning of success, usually started years and years and years and years ago. So I want to bring on our next guest, Mr. Brian Clayton, who started in the lawn care industry when he was in high school. So now he's going to tell us a little bit about his process and his progress. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
I'm awesome. Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
You are welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, so lifelong entrepreneur. I've never had a boss. I started mowing yards in high school as a way to make extra money. I wanted to go to soccer camp one year. My dad said, yeah, you're going to have to earn that money on your own somehow. So I just started mowing yards and did it as a way to pay through college. And fast forward over 15 years, I had 150 employees in that business.
Oh, wow. In
2013, I sold that company to the largest landscaping company in the country. And I retired, took about a year off, got bored. And then I started my second business, which is GreenPal. It's like the Uber for lawn mowing. So like if a homeowner needs to get their grass cut, they just jump on GreenPal, order them right through the app.
Oh, wow. Is it national?
Yeah, it started in Nashville. And so I think our first year, we had 20 customers, 11 were my friends and family. Now, fast forward 7 years later, we have over 100,000 people use it every week to get the grass cut.
Do you have any in Long Beach, California?
Yeah. If you're in Long Beach?
Yes. And I have grass. I need my lawn cut because the maintenance man is not doing a good enough job for me. So I need an Airbnb, Uber, something to get it done.
Do I have a product for you?
Yes.
So, I love to always be selling.
Yes, that's what we do here.
So all you got to do is just jump on the website or go on the mobile GreenPal and enter your address. You'll get 5 quotes back from other lawn care services in Long Beach. And then you can just hire the one you want to work with. You can read reviews about them, look at ratings, how often they show up on time, how often their customers book them for a second lawn mowing, things like that. So you can make a good hiring decision. And then they come out and they do it and you pay them right to the app. And if it went well, you can just book them for the rest of the season.
I like that. I think that's unique. And I think that's creative. I love when people use their creativity. Now I have a weird question for you, Brian. You said when you were in high school, your dad said you had to pay for this and you just started mowing lawns. There are so many people that would have just accepted the fact or accepted the belief rather that they just weren't going to go. What do you believe makes you stand out from those other people?
I'd like to tell you that I was just a born entrepreneur, that I was just born motivated to go out and kill it. But the truth is my dad made me mow that first yard. In fact, he went next door with me and we cut the neighbor's grass for $20 and it took us 2 hours and we both split it. Mm-hmm. And we each took home $10. And granted, this was 1995 or six. And so, you know, it was $10. And ever since then, I was infected with the idea of just charting my own path and setting my own course in life. And I from that moment on, I was just wired to love business. Mm-hmm. And so I probably would have never gotten started had he not forced me to do it. But from that moment on, I just took to that business and grew it as much as I could. By the time I was 22 years old, I was in college going to school at night, and I had 5 employees. And so I was working 10, 12 hours a day mowing yards and going to school 2 or 3 hours every night. And I was working 7 days a week. But it really didn't feel like hard work because I was growing this business with its own revenues. I was bootstrapping it the whole way through. I had a business plan that I was working against over, you know, like a 5-year period of time. And it was fun to see that happen. It was fun to see it grow. And ever since then, I have just been wired to love growing my businesses and seeing them prosper. And also the people around me inside of the little businesses I created prosper as well. For me, my companies have been kind of my vehicle for my own personal development. The thing that causes me to level up, the thing that causes me to have to learn about leadership, learn about management, learn about marketing, all of these different things that you kind of have to be pretty decent at to make it in small business. those companies have always been the thing that caused me to be better, be smarter, and just be as good as I can be. And that's one reason why I love it.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that I noticed, though, that seems pretty consistent is the lawn care industry. What was it, you know, because sometimes serial entrepreneurs, they'll have this business, like maybe I'll have a donut shop. Now I'm opening up, you know, a bookstore, but it can be varied. You've been consistently in the lawn care industry. Is it because everyone has a lawn, or, you know, you have a very low overhead? What interests you about the lawn care industry?
Yeah, so I don't think it's absolutely imperative that an entrepreneur have to have innate domain experience in whatever business they're entering, but I think it does help. Mm-hmm. For me, I spent 15 years in the lawn maintenance business, growing a business from zero to over 100 employees. By the time I sold that company, we had $10 million a year in annual revenue, and I built that from zero. So I saw over that period of time several things in the industry that I knew technology could solve. I saw what technology was doing for ride sharing and what it was doing for like accommodations like Airbnb. And I just knew that this idea was going to exist. Somebody was going to build it, and that I was the guy that could put together the team to build it and bring it to fruition. What I under-indexed on, what I underestimated was how difficult it was going to be making the transition from a blue-collar entrepreneur to a tech entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. I really, really thought that I would just hire a couple engineers and we would build this thing and release it, and then we would just watch it grow and market it. Mm-hmm. And nothing was further from how it actually worked out. It took me literally almost 3 years to reinvent myself as an entrepreneur and understand how to build software, how to execute technology-based products, and how to understand how to design software that people want to use and will use, and then how to market those things and things like growth hacking and all the things that go into growing that and distributing that kind of product. I had to like learn from zero, and that took years. In fact, had I known how hard it was going to be, I probably wouldn't have ever done it. But I'm glad I did, because now looking back 7 years after starting the second company, I'm just a completely different person. And it's because this business has caused me to level up, caused me to have to learn these skills to compete and to win at it. So I don't think it's necessary and absolutely imperative that, you know, you work at a donut shop for 10 years before you want to go start franchising your own donut shop. But I think it definitely, definitely helps. Mm-hmm. I coach entrepreneurs and business owners in Nashville, and one guy is opening up a pizza restaurant, and he literally went to work at Papa John's for 3 months, Domino's for 3 months, Little Caesars for 6 months to learn their systems, learn how those businesses work from the inside out before he went off and did it on his own. So I think it can help. For me, there's nothing particularly about freshly cut grass that I just love. It's just, you know, like, for me, it was the lane I've been in, and I know the business well, and I've been able to win at it, and so I just stuck with it.
I love that. That is great. Okay, I'm going to come back. I have some more questions, but I have to introduce our next guest, and I don't think if I don't introduce him soon, he's going to introduce himself, because he's joined the conversation. He's asked questions. He's made comments, and that's that marketing mind, that marketing genius right there. I want to introduce Bruce Harkle. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
I'm well. Happy to be joining you from Toronto, Canada.
Yeah. How's it going down there in Toronto?
We just had some good news that kind of some of the lockdown restrictions are going to be lifted starting tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of an exciting week from that perspective. Yeah.
What is one of the first things you're going to do?
I got a hair appointment booked for Friday. So it's badly needed.
No, I thought that was your mad scientist look. You know what I mean? I thought that was the look that you had created for the show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, years ago, I actually did sort of have the long hair look, but I've kind of had it for a while now, and I'm looking forward to a bit of a refresh.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So what you're going to have to do, Bruce, is come back to the Roundtable Talk Show. And after you have your hair cut, yeah, and all cleaned up, you might look like a different person. But
perhaps, yes.
We were talking about marketing, and we were talking about Sean and how the artists market. And then we were talking about Brian and his app and getting the word out about his app. Tell us a little bit about what you do, Bruce.
Sure. So I'm a marketing consultant, and I specialize in working with software as a service companies, primarily business to business. So, you know, services that help with, say, cybersecurity, marketing automation, sales automation, tools like that. And what I do is help companies attract more leads through content marketing. Mm-hmm. I kind of came into this business through technology journalism a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And I talked to a lot of PR people in the course of doing that and wanted to kind of expand what I do. So I moved into that a few years ago. Yeah.
You're also an author. Tell us about your book.
Yeah. So building on Sean's comments and the interview there, I built up this website called projectmanagementhacks.com a couple of years ago for project managers. And after building up that audience for about 3 years, I wrote my first book, which is Project Managers at Work. And it's a interview style book, basically saying there are a lot of books that kind of will give you project management techniques or templates. So that part of the market is well served. Where there was a gap was kind of more about the war stories. Mm-hmm. So I interviewed project managers from companies like NASA, Google, IBM, and even Amtrak. So I'm a big kind of train buff as well, about like, what are the projects? How do you motivate people? How do you kind of build these sort of like world-changing projects? And that was kind of the first book. Kind of during the lockdown, I've kind of been starting my next one and hoping to come out with that later this year.
Okay, that's wonderful. That is definitely wonderful. Now, you're a marketing genius, Bruce. You didn't tell me that. I said that. I just, you know, I don't want anybody saying you called yourself a genius. So I give that label to you. But again, you've heard, let's talk about Brian. I'm sure Brian has plenty of ideas. He has like at least 400 people in his marketing department that works on this. But just offhand, in your genius, what are some, if any, suggestions, tips, recommendations you would have for him to get the word out about his app?
Well, based on what I've heard so far, it sounds like the national coverage as well. You've already done great work in building in social proof in the forms of rating and reviews. The next growth strategy I might consider would be looking at partnerships and a referral program. So for example, if somebody has done, let's say, two transactions through the platform and they seem to be having a good experience, offer them a credit on the platform if they refer a friend. So that would be sort of a referral. You might already have that. I don't know.
We're just spitballing here, Bruce. I just put you on the spot just to see what you had.
So, and then the other one, I guess, would be to look at partnerships of what are other businesses that already have customers like yours. So like real estate agents, maybe electricians, people that are already interacting with homeowners on like a regular basis.
Like property managers.
Yeah, potentially.
Yeah.
Or people that do snow plowing in the winter.
Yeah. He needs to get Sean to write a song about the joys of mowing the lawn.
Yeah.
Sean, you got a song for us?
I can definitely do that. My first business was a landscaping business also.
Oh, and wow.
Pain. You know the pain, brother.
Absolutely. And I was also motivated to do that by my parents. My motivation was buying a couple turntables to learn how to DJ when I was about 12 years old. And my parents had me write a loan proposal, and I would pay off money through cutting the grass. My grandfather taught me a lot about how to operate the equipment, and my mom helped me mail the flyers, and then my dad would drive me around the neighborhood. I started when I was 12, and then I had that all the way through high school and had all my friends work for me. And my mom runs a business now. She retired a few years ago, and she took it over. So we still have it, but that was amazing to, you know, to hear that. Can I ask a question, or is that not a good time?
Go for it.
Anytime's a good time, Sean. This is what we do.
I just want to make sure. being respectful here, but so Brian, I had this thought. My whole love for entrepreneurship and having the freedom to work for myself started from landscaping. I've also met a number of other entrepreneurs that would move into other things from that. And I wondered if, like, from your perspective, I know you mentioned that you didn't necessarily have like an inherent love for like fresh cut grass, for example, but what do you think you learned through building a landscaping business that is applied to like entrepreneurship in general? And are there any things that come from the process of maintaining or cutting a lawn or dealing with a project that can apply to business as a whole? You know, maybe for some kid that's thinking about becoming an entrepreneur or a business owner, and how that type of business can be a really great training ground for that. I know it's had a gigantic impact on my work as an entrepreneur, even though I'm not in that industry anymore.
Yeah, there's probably so many parallels and lessons you can tease out of that from the lawn mowing business and extrapolate it into business in general. One of the beautiful things about the lawn mowing business is that its barriers to entry are so low that literally anybody can jump into it. And so, like, I believe small businesses is the path of mobility for anybody in America. And so a great business is the lawn mowing business. You can jump into it. What can you learn from it is a relentless focus on the customer, which that is like a fundamental that applies to almost every business, because that business is so competitive, it's so cutthroat that you have to serve your customer really better than your competition at all times. Because if you miss a week, if you don't do the edging right 1 week, if you don't blow off the grass clippings 1 week, your customer will find somebody else very quickly. And it's the marketplace is a relentless teacher for that. And the lawn mowing business is great access to that. Whereas, you know, if you are, you know, a teacher or a police officer, or you work for a business, you don't necessarily have access to that type of unvarnished constant feedback from the marketplace. Lawn mowing business will give you that. And so I love how you pose that question, because I think there are several fundamentals and principles that apply to just something as simple as a lawn mowing business that probably are universal in most any business.
That's amazing.
I think that's an excellent question. Definitely an excellent question. What I find interesting is I always tell people, I don't select the dates that the guests are going to appear on. The guests select their own dates, but somehow magically, miraculously, whatever you want to call it, there's always commonalities. I'm like, who could have planned two people who not only started in lawn care, okay, I get that, but are still now to this day in some form or fashion in the lawn care industry? I think that's amazing.
Wow.
Back to the lawn care, because we have more questions. I want to introduce our next guest, Mr. Stephen Howard, and he's going to talk to us about consistency, because this gentleman has published 20 books, but he's going to talk. I'm sorry.
Bravo.
Okay. See, Bruce is talking with me again. But his latest book, we're going to talk about how stress and anxiety impact your decision making. Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you, Sharifa. Glad to be here.
I heard this noise and I'm like, did I say it wrong? Did I say, was it 40 books and I said 20? Was it 21? I don't know. Did you written a lot of books?
Well, it actually, this is the 21st under my name, and I have 9 others under a pseudonym. So it's actually now 30, but we'll call.
Right on.
So do we get to know the pseudonym, or is that something that's like top secret?
I did a joint project with a friend, kind of like a Reader's Digest brand, and we called it Project U. Did you lose me there?
I'm with you right now.
So we called it Project U, and think about your personal development as a project, like a project manager would. So we created a thing called Project U Life, and we wrote 9 books under that series, including a book on forgiveness, a book on health, so just basically things you'd want to do for personal development. So, and we used a pseudonym for that series of books. But my own books, and it kind of leads back to what Sean was talking about when about artists and finding different ways of promoting it. As a writer, one of the things I do is repurpose content. So this book, How Stress and Anxiety Impacts Your Personal Decision-Making, is an offshoot from my previous book, which is Better Decisions, Better Thinking, Better Outcomes. that book was aimed at leaders to help them in their decision-making in the workplace as leaders. And so I took chunks of that out, and this book is aimed at everybody who makes personal or professional decisions. And then I've just launched this week my own YouTube channel, Stephen Howard on Marketing, because my background, taking some content from my books and then creating little 7 to 9 minute videos on leadership, mainly to help people like Brian. It's aimed at entrepreneurs and small business leaders who don't get leadership training. Like Brian said, he's never had a boss, so he's never had the opportunity for an organization to pay for his
Brian
leadership
wants
development.
A boss, well,
no, I don't think he wants a boss, but he probably wants to learn a little bit how to lead people, right, how to motivate people, how to engage employees. So, and from that YouTube channel, I'm going to launch an 8-part video training series, so that people like Brian can, you know, pay and have self-development on leadership learning. So all about repurposing content and helping people out.
Okay. So for people who don't understand the terminology or the verbiage repurposing content, can you give us an example?
Sure. So for instance, the book, all right. So it came out this week, how stress impacts your decision-making.
That was fast. Can you put the book back?
Well, I was happy to. You always let an author put their book on screen. Absolutely. So you see here how the brain's on fire. And so in the book, I talk about how decision makers need to be first responders, not first reactors. So I wrote a blog post about that. So I excerpt under about how leaders need to become first responders, not first reactors when it comes to decision making. So I'm taking the same content and putting it out in different channels, different mediums. So that's what I mean by repurposing it, if that makes sense.
It definitely does. Now, in your book, you write that it's not just what you think, but how you think that makes a difference in the outcomes you generate. Can you please elaborate on that?
Yeah, when we're under stress, our brain automatically tries to go to a binary decision-making mode. Binary meaning two. So yes or no, black or white, A or B, those kind of choices. But optimal decisions often require more thinking, more strategy. I had a client, as an example, I was doing a classroom training in Fort Worth last December. Normally, I only allow 24 people in the class, 28 people registered. I said, okay, end of the year, fine, I'll take 28. On Monday morning, it's a 4-day program, 37 people showed up. And at noon, the client who's in Houston, she called me, says, I can't afford for 37 people, but how can you teach 37 people? And I said, it's going to be hard. She says, well, tell those other 9 people to go home. So she was under stress binary, keep them or send them off. And I said, whoa, slow down. Do you realize with those 9 people, 2 had flown in, 2 had driven from Oklahoma and 1 had driven from Kansas. They, 4 days, they got hotel reservations. Some have flight reservations. Do you really want to send them home? And how's that going to impact the employee? How are they going to feel when being tossed out of a classroom with their colleagues? Mm-hmm. Now, fortunately, I talked her into it. So she made a more optimal decision. I said, look, here's how I can change the class. Here's how I can handle 37 people. And as luck would have it, if we had not let those 9 people stay, they wouldn't get trained in 2021 because that company has canceled all classroom training for 2020 because of the coronavirus. So again, optimal decision making rather than binary decision making. So it's how you think, not just what you think. And that's so important to the process.
Yes, because the way you looked at it is more solution oriented. I would have looked at it the same exact way. Let's find a solution to this problem, because I can tell you right now, from if I was one of those students and I would have been sent home, I would have been very unhappy. And the reason is that I would have only thought that it was due to your planning that there were too many people. I mean, because you can limit the amount of tickets that are sold. You can limit the amount of people that can RSVP. Yeah. So you have an idea of how many people are going to show up. But to even open up the ability for people to show up and not be able to teach them, I would be very upset. And, in today's market or today's society, the last thing you want right now is a customer or anyone to be disgruntled, employees, whatever, because people give reviews all the time. And people are more likely to give negative reviews than they are to give positive reviews. So I try very hard. I recommend to all my clients, always do your best, always respond. My tip I always give people on social media is never leave a comment unanswered. That's my main philosophy. If someone says hi, you say hi back. I don't care what it is. You know, they say thank you. You say you're welcome, but you never leave a comment unanswered, because then that person doesn't feel, you know, appreciated. And people who don't feel appreciated go somewhere else. I think I got on my little soapbox there real quick, but I'm going to go introduce our next guest, who has been sitting there so beautifully and so patiently. And this it's very rare that we have so many men on the show. So I'm just now getting to our dear guest, Mackenzie Cunningham, and she is the CEO and founder of Sir She, first ever for women by women subscription box. Good morning, Mackenzie. How are you?
I am good. How are you?
I am excellent. Thank you for sitting and waiting and being so patient with us.
Of course. Of course. Thank you for having me.
Oh, this is interesting. I read your bio and I love the Sir She. Tell us a little bit about your company and what you do.
So let me explain the name, because a lot of people mispronounce it, but you got it right, Sir She. And it is just based on the word Circe, which is an old Southern term that just means a small unexpected gift. My grandmother in her house had a Circe closet. And whenever she went to a party or to lunch with anyone or just seeing anyone, she would take a little Circe with her. It's just a small gift to just show appreciation that you're seeing someone. It was definitely her love language was gift giving. And it is definitely mine. So as a play on the word Circe, Sir She is just a small and unexpected gift to her from She. So everything in our subscription and gift boxes are made by female owned small businesses in hopes of helping them grow their brand.
Mm-hmm. So is your company more like an Etsy where everyone has their own individual stores, or is it more like an Amazon where there's only basically one store, but a lot of different vendors?
It's more like FabFitFun meets Etsy. So you get, there's a subscription box or there's gift boxes that you can get. You can just buy once. And then everything in it is made by female owned small businesses. And with each box, you also get a magazine, and every woman whose product is in the magazine, they have their own page, and it tells the story about their brand, what products they offer other than the thing that is just in your box, why they started their business, why you should support that woman and her business. And then there's also a coupon code, so you can go and support her business directly, because that's the whole point. We want to help grow her brand. And the whole point of that is because women don't get the same amount of funding as men. In 2019, women only got 2% of all VC funding, which is insane, 2%. So because women, we are usually seen as entrepreneurs last. We're mothers, wives, a lot of other things first. Like me, I have a 2-year-old, I'm 7 months pregnant right now. And kind of comes after that. And that's how venture capitalists and banks and a lot of people that give you the money you need to grow your business look at you. So I just wanted to help all these women grow their brand. But also we give 10% back to nonprofits that benefit women and girls. So we're helping women grow their brand. We're helping you to shop small and support the brands that matter to you. And then also giving back.
I love the giving idea. I love the Circe. What made you decide to actually make a business out of the gift giving?
So I actually was in alcohol sales since I was legally able to drink. And I traveled all the time and I loved it, but it just wasn't very fulfilling. And it is probably like a 95% male industry. And everyone I worked with was a guy, and they were 30, 40 years older than me. So whenever I would go work with men all over the country, the first thing they would say is, oh, are you the promo girl? I'm like, no, I'm your boss today, thanks. And I was just really tired of being talked to like that all the time. And I just knew so many women that had so many amazing businesses, but it was kind of their side hustle or on the back burner. And they were afraid to take that leap into making it into their full-time job. And I had a girlfriend named Katie, and she had a hair bow business called, oh my gosh, it was called Pretty Honest Bows. And I just loved her hair bows, and I wanted to help her grow her brand. And I bought a bow from her, and I was her first customer, and got in the car and said, how can I help her grow her business? And it was like the universe needed to hear me ask that. I'd been putting out into the universe, I'm very woo-woo into manifesting all this thing, and had been wanting to help people and have my own business. I just had no idea what I wanted to do. And the second I said, how can I help her grow her business? It was like a download. The universe told me everything right then, the name of the business, how it would work, everything. And I just kind of ran with it and decided that I would put her bows in one of our boxes. We have a mama box, which is geared towards moms with kids of any ages. So we have different boxes you can choose from. And we did that so that no matter what your business is, I have an audience to deliver it to.
So when did you start your business?
So technically I started it February of last year, but it was a very Beyonce Lemonade album moment because no one, including my parents, no one knew about it until we came out and told the world we existed in August. We came out August 18th, which was the 99th anniversary of the ratification of women's suffrage to the Constitution. So it was kind of in celebration of women having a voice in this country. I wanted to use my voice to tell everyone that what I'd been doing. And then we launched on September 23rd. So we haven't even been open a full year yet.
So that, congratulations on that. I think that's wonderful. I think that's amazing. I love what you stand for. We had a guest on yesterday's show. His business was Uncrowd. It's at uncrowd.io is the website. You can check it out on the Facebook page, the Roundtable Talk Show. But one of the reason he created Uncrowd is a platform for VC funding for women and minority owned businesses. And his focus was, yes, definitely. I was excited as well. I was like, let me stop the show now and go to uncrowd.io. But his, and he was a white guy, just to say he was, but he was so passionate. He said, the number he gave as far as minority owned business was less than 1%.
Less than, And funding. Black women get the absolute least of anyone, which is why we actually just came out with our Black Lives Matter box last week. And it sold out in less than an hour, which is amazing. And everything in those boxes were made by Black women owned businesses. And we gave 100% of the profits away to All on the Line, which is help. Their goal is to help in gerrymandering and restoring fairness to elections. And the Loveland Foundation, which helps to give therapy to Black women and girls. So a charity that helps to bring change and the one that brings healing. So that was huge. And I learned so many facts about how little Black women get. It is insane, but they actually are the fastest growing group of entrepreneurs. It's insane how many Black owned businesses there are and Black women that have started businesses in the last few years. It's wild.
Yes.
Interesting, Sharifa. I just read a couple of days ago that when we came out of the 2006-2008 financial crisis, minority and women owned businesses created something like 1.6 million jobs. Businesses owned by white males or owned equally by men and women lost 600,000 jobs.
And wow, I would love to see that.
Yeah, I'll send you a link to the article.
Why do you think that was?
I think the entrepreneurial spirit is, I think it's starting at ground zero, but I just think they just moved a lot faster I really don't know 100% why. I just know the statistics show that they created over a million, like I think it was like 1.6 million jobs coming out of the financial recession. What was that called? The Great Recession. And white male owned businesses and businesses owned jointly by men and women equally lost jobs, had job losses. So it's just strange.
They may have been more driven at that point. You know, after a while, we're like, I got to do something, especially moms. When I first built my first website in 1994, people were like, what were your motivation? I was like, my kids were like, what time is dinner? I'm like, I got to feed these kids. I got to figure it out. You know, that's what we do as moms, right, Mackenzie?
Girl, yes. And I have a little girl. And I mean, just after doing the research and seeing the statistics and just how little help women get and how women are really treated in a lot of industries, just not taken as serious. I was just like, I've got to do something to change this for her.
Absolutely. Sean, have you been writing any music or seen a lot of artists doing music in regards to what's going on in the world today?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, initially when the quarantine started with COVID and stuff, there was a lot of, you know, writing and inspiration around that. I would say that I've seen a lot of it more, not necessarily that like the song itself would be inspired by something also, but that inspiration to create and share a message was definitely incited either by any of the current challenging social situations that we're in, you know, at the moment. There's definitely a lot, you know, a lot of creation happening around that. And I think a lot of uncomfort and distress in the idea that we can use music to give people a voice and, you know, and share and provide love and positivity. There's definitely a lot of creation happening around those ideas.
Mm-hmm. What have you seen in marketing, Bruce?
Well, I thought it was very interesting to hear that Mackenzie created a new offering specifically in relation to some of the recent kind of social tensions. And it was fascinating to hear that you designed it both in terms of kind of how you planned out the profits and planned out kind of the contents of the box. So I think that's fascinating because I've seen a lot of companies that have released public statements, you know, saying that, you know, we're trying to improve inclusion and diversity, and I suppose that's better than nothing. But what really impressed me about your story is that, you know, you looked at what was happening and decided to factor that into the product that you offered, as well as making charitable contributions. So I think that's kind of a inspiration for people that, you know, see these problems, and then, you know, you could do level one, you know, doing a press release, that's better than nothing. And then level two is kind of model and study what Mackenzie has done.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you work with definitely certain high level companies, but one of the things that people have been discussing is the messaging that's going out, you know, because several large corporations have, you know, been in the media for some of their decisions in regards to what's going on in the world. When we think of the Starbucks of the world, I think Taco Bell had to make a statement. There's so many companies that had to make a statement. With any of the companies or clients that you work with, do you have that discussion with them about, okay, do you want to make a statement? What type of statement do you want to make? Some people have the idea that they don't want to get involved from a corporate perspective. And then you have the Chick-fil-A companies who definitely tell you, this is what we believe, this is what we stand by. What are the conversations you're having?
Well, I guess I've observed two trends over the past few months. The first one would be, I'd say, the COVID-19 related trends. Mm-hmm. So as that relates to the technology industry and the clients that I work with, there's been a lot of interest in doing marketing in relation to remote work security. How can that be made more effective or more productive? And there's been a lot of interest in doing that. For example, if you sell a communication or collaboration software product, it's a very natural fit. Mm-hmm. So I've seen a lot of desire to address those trends. So far, in terms of the clients that I work with, there has not been interest, unfortunately, in speaking about some of the racial violence, unfortunately. So I've more been observing that from what I've seen some other companies do. My sense actually is that it seems to be a relatively missed opportunity for many companies. And when I say marketing about it, I mean creating a message that engages with it, but then backing that up with some more substantive change, mm-hmm. Whether that be a recruiting practice, promotion practices, or if you're, for example, wanting to do a partnership arrangement with another organization where that's kind of their focus and mission.
Hmm. I think that's interesting. I want to go over to you, Stephen. Almost the same question, but from just a different approach. With everything going on in the world. And I think people have been hit back to back to back emotionally by what's going on. I mean, because we went from COVID-19 to quarantine to racial injustice to protesting and everything going on in the world. So I know it has to be very stressful for people to make decisions when it's like, we don't even know what to believe. Do we have to wear masks? Do we not wear masks? Are we over it? Are we not over it? Are the cases increasing? Are they decreasing? Are they staying the same? Are people dying? Are they living? It's like, you can't hardly think. So what do you recommend, Stephen?
Well, calm down, find ways to calm yourself up. You know, Sean's routine in the morning of meditating and stuff like that, just finding those moments of peace and calm. But, you know, prolonged stress causes degeneration in the brain and the part of the brain that's responsible for self-control. Mm-hmm. And so what we're already seeing during the lockdown is, you know, alcohol abuse, mm-hmm. Family abuse. People just can't control their emotion. Well, that's part of our brain is shutting down. The part of our brain that does control our self-control, regulate our self-control. No wonder that people are coming out and getting frustrated. Now you're having people attacking security guards in Walmarts and other places, or grocery stores, and, you know, arguments, fights breaking out, whether, you know, I don't want to wear a mask, you have to wear a mask. I don't know, it's optional, you know, and now people are fighting each other. One of the things I'm most concerned about from a societal standpoint, and yes, it's very important that we get our economies back on right, but our government leaders need to understand that a year from now, we need to start focusing on how they're going to fund the long-term mental health of our country and Canada and the other countries, quite honestly. You know, yes, we need our stimulus checks. Yes, we need all the economic things now to get people back. I understand all that, but someone needs to start thinking about the long-term mental health. And one of the funny thing, not funny actually, but when I wrote my book, it was already projected that the increase in the United States of dementia, Alzheimer's disease, and stroke, it would increase by 67% by the end of this decade. And we'd have over 10 million Americans by 2030 impacted by stroke, dementia, and Alzheimer's. This was before the pandemic. Those numbers are only gonna go up. And teenagers are getting stressed out because, you know, they're not used to being locked down and their brains are not fully formed and they're getting highly frustrated and highly agitated. And when they come out, I think you're going to see all kinds of teenage crime and teenage bad decisions, teenage drunk driving, teenage social issues happening. When they get released from the houses, they're going to be absolutely, some of them are going to go, they're stir crazy. They're going to go nuts. So we need to understand what's happening to our brains as in addition to what's happening to our economy.
So how can we avoid that?
Breathe. I just did by your question. I went on my stock. All being a first responder, and a first actor, used to react, and people react to everything. They react to situations, they react to events, they react to people. We need to catch our breath. We need to calm ourselves down. Interestingly, I was taught as a child, Stephen, when you get angry, count to 10. You can't hit somebody, you can't throw something, you know, don't hit another child, count to 10. Well, I thought it was just an old wives' tale. It turns out there's scientific evidence that when it takes 8 seconds for the prefrontal cortex, the rational part of our brain, to take over from the amygdala, which is at the back of our brain, which is the emotional control center. So when we're getting emotionally hijacked, the amygdala has taken over. And if we count to 10, which is roughly 8 seconds, we can rationally get control and become a responder, not a reactor to the situation. So, you know, what I was taught as a child is actually true. Count to 10, breathe, get yourself in control. Realize when you're getting emotionally hijacked and then purposefully get yourself in a state before you make a decision, before you react.
I'm gonna have to try that. Because sometimes I get to 11 or 12 and I'm still not calm. So I'm like, maybe I need to count to 20 because it takes me some time.
Whatever it takes you. I mean, but at least you understand yourself. And that's the critical part of it, is to understand.
Yes. To thy own self be true. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just typically allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is listening live, as well as everyone who's watching this show in the archives, and let them know what you would like for them to take away from your appearance. We are going to start with you, Mackenzie.
Well, first of all, I wanted to show you guys a box really quickly. And this is just one of our state boxes. We have boxes that are everything in it is from a certain state. So this is our South Carolina box. And actually, Danny Baird, who's on the show Southern Charm on Bravo, which if you don't watch Bravo, what are you doing? Treat yourself. She designed this box. So everything from the outside, literally the pattern to the inside is made by a woman. But go to our website, surshe.com, S-U-R-S-H-E.com, and check out what we have and help empower women and shop small and give back. And definitely check out the nonprofits that we were giving to the Loveland Foundation and All on the Line, because they're making great strides and doing really, really good work, because all lives matter and we need to support that.
So we don't get to see what's inside the box.
This is an empty one, but I can go get you a full one, girl.
I want to see. I want to see. Okay.
Somebody else go. I'm going to go grab a full one.
Okay, we're going to go over to Sean right real
back.
Quick.
I'll be right back.
Sean, you with us?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What I would hope that everyone gets away from today is that if you have something, that you should find what you're passionate about and that you have the ability to be able to live a life of passion and make a living doing that. I feel so fortunate that I'm able to get up and go to work every day, but I never really feel like I'm working. No matter, I mean, things get tough, and it's definitely a challenging road. But the freedom and the fulfillment that you get out of just really really authentically doing what you love, there's no better feeling in the world than that. And I was really fortunate to learn that really young and be able to go on. I think the hardest part of every entrepreneur, I would assume, but especially when you're getting started, is having patience and recognizing that that it just takes time to grow. And you mentioned something earlier about the length of time that it takes to, you know, kind of get things going and moving. And there's a great story that Les Brown tells about the bamboo tree. Have you ever heard that story?
I have not. I would love to hear it.
Okay. Well, I would love to share it with you, because it's my favorite story to tell people. And it had such a huge impact on my perspective about a growth of a career and a passion. So the Chinese bamboo tree, in order for it to grow, you have to water it every day for 5 years before it sprouts. And during that time, it's growing deep into the ground and creating really deep roots. But the first guy that had to have grown that tree must have thought he was nuts, you know, because his friends see him walking outside every day and he's pouring water on this dirt and nothing's happening. They're like, what is this guy doing? He's crazy. So after 5 years, it sprouts, and within 3 weeks, it grows like 80 feet tall. And so the fun question is, how long did it take it to grow? Was it 3 weeks or 5 years? And we obviously all know the answer, but it's something to recognize that even when we don't see all that growth happening on the surface, it's definitely happening. We're building the foundation for that. And hearing everybody's stories today about their passion and their careers and development of their business, it just attests to my firm belief in that it takes time and it takes passion to be able to move through something. So I hope that that's what everyone gets out of today. And I hope that your show is, I honor you for creating this show, because I think it will give people hope to be able to have the same fulfillment that we've been blessed with to have in life.
I think that is so beautiful. Thank you, Sean. Stephen, what do you have for us?
Well, I'm going to add what Sean says. I've got a note above my desk. So for the entrepreneurs out there, or those who are interested in personal growth, my sign simply says, there's no forgiveness for playing small. Mm. Don't play small. Sharifa, you're not playing small. You're playing big with this show, and it's going to take a while to grow. And that's wonderful. And I also congratulate for doing that. I guess my two personal messages are, obviously, go buy the book, learn how to make better decisions. So understand how stress and anxiety impact your brain. It's available in Canada as well, Bruce, on Amazon. And if you're interested in leadership or entrepreneurs, I like giving back, and that's what my YouTube channel is all about. So do a search on YouTube. If you search Stephen Howard on leadership, I've got 7 videos up already. Subscribe to the channel, and I'll keep adding more content in the weeks to come. So it's a way I'm giving back to people, helping them to learn how to be a better leader.
Thank you. Definitely have to come back. We want to learn more about some of your leadership tips. Bruce, in Canada, what do you have for us?
I have 3 things, actually. So 2 that I learned from our fellow panelists, and then 1 for me. So I'd like to kind of emphasize what I learned from Sean's comments around a daily routine. What that looks like for me is similar. It involves reading, it involves writing, meditation. This idea of kind of chipping away at the block, you know, day by day to make incremental progress, I think is very valuable. And what I learned from Stephen's comments was kind of a diagnostic for bad decision-making. If you see a problem and you can only think of two ways to solve it, then that probably tells you that your decision-making needs a bit of a tune-up. And then obviously to get the full insight, you read the book, right? But we start there. And then my third point would be, I'm working on my second book right now, which is about marketing growth strategies for software companies. And that will be coming out later this year. You can find out more about it at brucehalpern.com. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
You are so welcome. Thank you for joining us. Mackenzie, did you get the California box?
We don't have California yet, but I'm going to let you know. But I did get our mama box because I know you're a mom. So yes. I want to show you what's in here. But so you get it and it tells you all about what the business is and what it all means. And you get a little magazine. So here's an example of the magazine. And it has a page on every woman who is included in it. And at the bottom, there's a coupon code. And this season, everything is going to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And look at that little angel. That's my daughter on the back. Oh, she's always making an appearance for sure. But just a couple things in there. We have a few big items and then we have some smaller stuff. But this season, there's a little beach cover up. So this one just says vacay, even though we're probably all taking a vacay to the backyard.
Okay, I want that. I'm going through everything. I'm like, I want that.
And it's got cute little pom-poms on the end. It's really, really cute and really precious. And then we've got a book that was written by a woman here in Charlotte called Piper Fox Does Kindness. Her dog is named Piper. And it's just a little book about teaching your kids to be kind and do good deeds. And then this, which I think is helpful for every mom, it's a pack of school prints. So it has the first day of preschool and it goes all the way to last day of college. So first day, last day, all the way through college. And then we've got all natural insect repellent and sunscreen, deep free, all completely organic. We've got little candle from here in Charlotte, from the Charlotte Candle Company, rosé all day.
I'll take that.
Because I can't drink rosé right now, so I'm going to smell it all day. And then
I love the product name. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Rosé all day.
Rosé all day. And then we've got these dream pillows. These are made by a woman here in Charlotte as well. And the fabric for these are actually made by women in Ghana. And they're women who have escaped domestic violence situations. And then everything inside of it are essential oils and some herbs to help you get a really restful good night. Because you know, as moms, we're tired. So you put it in your pillow and it helps you go to sleep. And that's everything in the mama box. And they're only $49.99. So what a deal. And it's every 3 months. But I don't want to just leave everybody with my business stuff. Like everyone was saying, something to take away. I think that my kind of North Star thing that I always come back to is my favorite quote, which is go into the world and do well, but more importantly, go into the world and do good. And I think that that's kind of where I lead from. And I think that doing sales, which is where I came from, and what the whole point of my business is to help sell your brand, is that to be more concerned with serving than selling. And as long as you're doing something for others, then it'll all take care of itself.
I think that is so wonderful. Thank you. I'm definitely going to have to check out sirshe.com and pick up one of those boxes, the mama box, and so I can relax. It was just so relaxing. That's what I saw about it. I want to thank you all for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I also want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who's watching in the archives. We definitely appreciate your support, but I'm going to ask you to do a little bit more. Please visit the websites of our guests. Check out their books, check out their boxes, check out their music. Everything that's going on, please support the show, support the guests. And if you contact our guests, please make sure you let them know. Sharifa Hardy says hi. Until tomorrow at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, if you're interested in being a guest, please visit the website at asksharifa.com. Everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Bye.
Thank you, Sharifa. Bye. Thank you, everybody.